Hey podcast, my goal with this series is to find people in this industry that are better than I am and find out what they know and learn how they got to where they are. Looking forward to giving you guys some great value. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, we're back again with the Videographer's Digest. It's been a really long time, but we're back at it again. And I'm really proud to say that I met Daniel Rivera just now and we had a great conversation. I'm really looking forward to the conversation we're about to have and all the information and insights that he has on how he got to where he was or is now and how he got there in the first place. So without further ado, it's Daniel Rivera from Take 10 Video. You can introduce yourself. Feel free to say whatever you want.
Hey guys, I'm Daniel with Take 10. Pretty much there's a lot I got to get into with this transformation of how I got here, but it's like, I feel like, you know, to speak on it, I'm someone that's boots on the ground right now. I'm not somebody that's like at the top echelon of filmmakers that's going to tell you everything that I do X, Y, Z to build to a six figure, you know, scale to a six figure. I'm more the guy that's like taking on all those systems that are put in place by all those greats and trying to be the best practitioner for it. So, you know, a lot of that's challenging. A lot of growing pains, a lot of failures. And yeah, I pretty much, if we can just start anywhere, I was pretty much a filmmaker. I'm 26 years old, guys. So
yeah, that's good. Nice.
A little context, because I'm about to bring it back in time in the way back machine. If anyone watches Stuff You Should Know podcast, you should know that reference. Anyways. So, I've been doing this since, you know, I think I had a Sony, like one of those film, like home video cams, like people brought to their weddings and then you see Aunt Bertha with them. You know, I had one of those from my dad. He used to film and do a lot of home videos. He used to like see that as a kid growing up from like ages of 6 to, you know, 12 years old. And at 12, 13, he would just hand me the cam and I'd just be throwing Beanie Babies around, making narratives and stories and stuff. And just probably cringy stuff if you look back at it now, but I'm about to pull up some old hard drives, but yeah, that's pretty much how I started. I mean, it's probably, you know, social conditioning's a big thing. I imagine like it was just seeing my dad filming like all the time, you know, and just seeing like, wow, and seeing him edit. And then like, I think he had an old eMac and he would run like Final Cut, not even 7, like some old Final Cut Pro. And it was like seeing him get like him make some funny sound effect with some guy, you know, from our, you know, trying to embarrass my uncle doing something. Like he attached a head of him to a gator doing just wacko stuff. And then him just laughing at it. And then I'm like, that sounds fun. You know, it's like you're painting, but you're laughing at what you're creating because it's just so right. Absurd.
How young were you when your dad started doing that?
I think I was like between the ages of like 6 to like 12.
Man, your dad was making memes way before.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, way before. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, some family members wouldn't like that, but you know, he was the kind of guy that just did whatever to crack a laugh. And it was good, but like it landed me trying to do skits. I made this, my first production company was Metalhead Productions because, you know, Guitar Hero changed my life. I started becoming really into rock. And, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of emulate whatever, you know, you're really into at the time, right? Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, we have fads, phases, whatever. Still into rock, but nice. Also other things, rap and stuff. But, you know, it's like, I kind of had that. So it's like, I created Metalhead Productions and we just made skits and stuff and we just post them on YouTube. Probably catch barely any views. Sometimes we catch like 5K just randomly, but we get them taken down just because we would do dumb things. And mm-hmm. Yeah, YouTube was kind of wild west back then, but
was it copyright, like copyrighted music or
something? Copyright. So yeah, yeah, we just, I know, music. That we didn't understand any of that. And yeah, so basically I was really into that high school senior year. You know, I get to a place where we're doing video projects. Mm-hmm. I was in this marketing business academy for like 3 years, like from sophomore to senior, and it was just, they'd give us random projects and stuff. I mean, these are some of the same classmates sophomore year, mm-hmm. that I see up until senior, which is a very different experience in high school than usual. You just every class, every semester, someone new, right? Because it was more of like a like an academy, right?
Yeah, like a cohort.
Senior year, yeah, exactly. And senior year got to a place where it was like we got video projects and stuff. And I thought to myself, like, we had this thing where we had to make the decades of that year, the decade of that year. So 1910s all the way to 1990s, we do like 10 events from them and we create a film of it. And that was the, I think there was group of like 8 people and each person gets a decade and we just raffle, we just put what decade you want and put it, and then the number 2 option if you can't get it, and into a bin. And I told everyone in the class, everybody's talking about 1980s, 1990s, all these like fun years and more relevant, let's just do 1910s. And I just said, I'm gonna get the mega cast, I'm gonna get me as the filmer, I'm gonna get Bernie as the he's the main actor in one of like in the Actors Guild in our school, and he's in our marketing business academy. I'm gonna get the one guy who does graphic design. I'm gonna get the one, I'm gonna get all the people I know would create the best thing, you know.
Yeah.
And the dream just team. Because I the dream team. And I said, everybody pick 1910s, no one's gonna pick it. I mean, what the hell? People are gonna be like, what happened in the 1910s? And I was like, let's do it because I can make some World War I crazy crap, like crazy crap, you know? And that's what we did. We all put 1910s, and I shat you not, everyone else got their first or maybe their second option, or, you know, not a lot of people got their first option because everyone was fighting for 1980s, 70s and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the 1940s for World War II. Dude, nobody picked 1910. So I got every single member.
That's beautiful.
Because of that plan and stuff. And then what came of it was like one of the greatest, like at the time, myself now, I see that as like was a stepping stone, but it was a big stepping stone because it got me pumped for production. It got me pumped for, you know, being around people. And although it's not what I do now, which is like skits and, you know, productions in that terms away, which I'm getting into transitioning, but that was more for like, you know, like a story driven, right? That wasn't for commercial purposes. Was more, you know, action, like almost like a short film.
Yeah, I think we have very similar starts because in high school also I did like skits and stuff for my broadcast journalism program. And so we do like every,
that's dope, dude.
Yeah, every 2 months the school would like, there's 2 classes. So every month one class would show like, it was news and like, jokes and skits, but we did a skit called Investigative Reporting. So me and my friend would write this up, spend hours in the library, writing, editing, shooting these like kind of high quality, I guess, skits. But the coolest part about that was the whole school would sit down and watch at the same time every month. And so I could see everyone's reactions. Dope. Yeah, to all the jokes and all the funny stuff.
The reactions and stuff. And
yeah.
And to them, it's like Oscar winning and every time. So it's like, it makes you feel like you just want to keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, and if you have like an awesome group of people with you, it's so fun. It's just like,
oh no, for sure. Like people that are super laid back, easy to work with, and just want to make it better, you know?
Yeah, because I can't imagine. I'm pretty sure it sounds like we had the same process where a lot of these group projects, oftentimes you just want to like get it done with and get out. But like with these films, we were spending hours and hours and hours of time. Like
more time than you should, like anybody else's. Dude, there's people filming off their phones at the time, and the phones back then were so bad,
right?
2012, 2013 era. And you know, some guy played it off like one of those old school, like they're more like industry standard editing softwares like Avid. They played it off that, and it wasn't even rendered, so it was just like playing at 1/4 quality, like pixelated, like they're playing it through the editing software on a PowerPoint, and then the screen's like whatever on the corner. They didn't even know how to expand. And then like when we, since we're 1910s, are going to go in order from 10s to, you know, the 90s.
Yeah.
And we were, when we started, we're like, everyone was like, wow, like they're pissed. Like, how are we going to like,
I'll
the
do
second
it, right?
one was the one with the Avid. And so, you know, but.
Was that your first experience? Like a bigger production then? Like that type of
You know, I mean, it wasn't big, it's high school, and in your head it's big. In your head it's big for sure, and you think you're a big shot, but it's up until the transition to college that you realize you're not shit. and it's people, that's where people die, and that's where some people fly. It's like one of those, you're, it's gonna make or break you, right? And I think it broke me in the beginning, only because you know, I never really had support at home. I got to a place where pretty much had to work a lot of hours to get through school. And I'm putting in a lot of hours into school to get through it, taking, you know, trying to stuff into the GED classes, the general stuff, film courses too, and just maximizing my time and then working on the side. So I really had no time. And these classes weren't really allowing us to film. We were just studying film. We were, you know, I take even editing courses. They give us footage already filmed.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in a place where I was going from beginning to end X, Y, or A to Z film. Right. And it kind of sucked the soul out of me for a while. So I kind of just did the classes to do them, but I wasn't boots in the ground, being a filmmaker, communicating with people, giving value. None of that was happening. So when that doesn't happen, you're not going to get value back. Right. So you just feel like you're stuffing your brain with stuff that's not being executed.
Yeah.
And, you know, some that a lot of that's on me for sure. But, you know, I could have taken less hours at work, whatever, but you're really stuffing into this dream of getting this bachelor's, and then somebody on a production set's going to look at it, read it like it's the grand old Da Vinci Code. And he's going to be like, we need this guy on the team, start him at 80K and have him doing what he wants to do, exactly what he wants to do on this giant set. And you kind of, it sounds ridiculous, but you kind of think that's how it's going to work when you're just a freshie newbie and you just don't have a good grasp of how the world really functions. And you just, it ends up becoming a fallacy. It's like a fairy tale. But what were you?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like, you only have so many hours in the day, too. It's not your fault necessarily that these things kind of suck the soul out of you. And
you
know, I think it's great hearing that from you because you went to a school that had classes focused on film. Like I'm not doing that because my school doesn't have
I mean not really focused. It's like a it was like a junior college, but they did have like a really good film, a lot of film courses, right? But I mean subjective because I wasn't really doing anything if it's good. But for me it would just taught me what I'm glad for school because it taught me that I wasn't for it. It really did. And I can't say the same for the next person right aside from me, right? That could be the main thing that they really need. And it's what you want. So I can't down it for anybody else, but for me, it wasn't for me. I'm glad I went through it because it gave me, I got a little, you're like a sponge still. You're absorbing a lot of different people, a lot of different minds, perspectives, and it helps for sure. But yeah, so that went 4 to 5 years of nothingness, void of no film. It was pretty depressing. I feel like I always was like lost. Like I didn't know my thing. I questioned whether, you know, I compared myself. I had imposter syndrome.
Right. Was this during school and or right after?
During school. And then even getting back in the film when that hiatus was finally over. And I'll talk over what was the catalyst for that. Because it was huge and it was probably needed to be something big to get me back in the film. Something like life-changing. And pretty much, I forgot what I was going with that. But
no,
the transition was... It was to get from that to that, you're going to have bumpy roads. The mind is going to be the main enemy. Yourself is always going to be the main enemy because at the end of the day, nobody's telling you constantly you're nothing. I mean, there's some people probably going to some abusive stuff. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'll hear that. But for the vast majority, nobody's telling you, oh, you're not good enough. You're this and that. It's just us. And maybe just somebody gave a vibe. Yeah, yeah. And if maybe somebody gave a vibe or maybe kind of incline that or maybe even just said it, now you're the one just scratch recorder repeating it. So it's, you know, when people say, oh, people always down you, people always this, there's so much haters, it's probably just you replaying one person's 1 second of some verbiage for eternity. And now they're everybody and now they're this, and the mind can definitely make you fool you into thinking that it really is happening. Like, but it's just you not being confident, you not being secure in yourself. And ultimately, it's you just not knowing a lot. And a lot of it is just getting yourself adequated with getting knowledge, executing, getting knowledge, executing.
Yeah, I think
that's the toughest thing. And for too long, I was a bookworm, bro.
No, I mean, I think we all had to be at some point. But then there's a point where you have to just go out and do. And I like what you said, where you just – have to learn and then execute. You have to do that over and over again because it's super easy to get in your head, especially looking at like the numbers and the analytics of things, like why certain things don't do well. Or like there's one shoot I did where I spent like 6 days shooting like an hour or so each for different locations, mm-hmm. different places. And I posted it. It didn't do too hot compared to like another shoot that I did that we did in like 10 minutes. It was just a one take slow-mo thing. Right. And it's why it's so easy to hop to the worst conclusion and be like, oh, it's me. Like my skills aren't there or.
Yeah, no, dude, what you said right there resonates with me a lot, because even now I get those moments to where it's like, so there's a certain expectancy, right, when you're getting like higher up in level, and now you kind of set yourself a new standard every time you rise to the top, and now there's anxiety because it's like, man, I have to be on today to meet that Daniel who did like that last 2 week shoot who was just on. Now what if I'm not on as much today, but everyone's seen that work, everyone has that level of impression that I'm going to be able to deliver that. So there could be a level of pressure even in success like that. And I'm actually going through it just right now. And the only way I really kind of get over it in my mind is just, since it is a mind thing, is I meditate, but I also think about it in the perspective of setting yourself up for success, you know, and that's, you know, shot list. That is, taking time to set up the night before, as getting good sleep, that is getting yourself to the 100% to where it's easy to be on again, and you know, not getting in your head too much, like you just gotta wake up and zap, and it's like that, you know, it takes a lot of mistakes to get to failure, and it's a road of like 20 of them, you know.
Right, it's hard because we're not robots. I try to think about we're in the creative field, but we try to build processes to make things easier for ourselves and to like make it easier for us to get to that creative process, like that stage where we're actually making things. But I realize now that like so many of my decisions are based on emotions, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but you know, when it's like, oh, I'm feeling tired or I'm feeling exhausted or I feel like I don't want to make anything, I think what you said there is perfect. Like you have to take care of yourself so that one, you're in a good mindset to do these things, and then two, you can actually have the ability to do it. Like I'm pretty bad at eating sometimes or even sleeping, and I know that definitely makes
eating
me, like,
for sure for me,
right? Like I don't want to, or I get hangry, or you know, I'm not in the mood to do a shoot even though like I have been 2-3 weeks. So I love that. It sounds simple, right? It sounds like, oh, just eat, just take care of yourself, but I think the second part of that is that it affects your mental state. And then when that's affecting, you know, throws everything out of whack.
Yeah, and then you have maybe a huge workload, and then that's affecting your appetite. Mm-hmm. And then you can't just, like, wish away your workload. You got to work through it. So then it's like, yeah, I totally get – I'm going to turn on the fan. It's getting a little hot.
No worries.
before I burn up. But, yeah, dude, it's a battle. But the thing is, as long as we give our mind a little something – whether that's through meditation, whether that's through gratitude of recognizing, because somebody, I forgot where I saw it, but somebody said, you can't have depression if you have gratitude. Like you just can't be depressed if you express gratitude. And that's so true, because depression is like the absence of gratitude. It's like, oh, I wish this was working like this. Oh man, this life sucks. Or you look at everything negatively. So it's like, you don't look at the good within that. So when you're grateful, it's like you recognize, like even just like me, like saying, because I write in a journal, and sometimes I'm not on it, but I've been pretty on it recently, is I'll do meditation for like 5 to 10 minutes, and then I'll write 3 things on a notepad for each day, saying one thing that I'm grateful for, one object that I'm grateful for, and one aspect of life that I'm grateful for. So I'll put, I'm grateful for my girlfriend for always looking out for me and helping me on some production shoots, you know, be specific too. And then the second one, the object, I'm happy that I have all my film gear paid for. The third one, the aspect of life, I'm happy that I have all my family, you know, living still. And then it just sets your day up to see your life as like, it's powerful, dude. It's to actually write it down. To write it down.
Because I agree with you. I don't necessarily think, I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that, because I know,
oh for sure,
yeah, people, and I think you know that too, like I know people that suffer from depression, and I think if I told them to just be grateful, they might, you know, punch me in the face.
They might. No dude, because, well, the thing is, I've been
Right.
So I was those people. Mm-hmm. So I don't say holier than thou. I'm better than. I know everything now. I am the grand, you know, yeah. Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, or nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I just see it as literally like it's not something that can logically be put into words. And for you to mm-hmm. be cured, right? Logic doesn't work with emotion. It just it's like apples to oranges. So totally get that. It was just the one thing for me. So, you know, if it helps somebody out there, maybe, but obviously it's not a cure all. There's going to be other things that come into play to help you. For me, it was a multitude of things. For somebody else, it's probably a whole other multitude of different things.
Yeah.
We don't know. So,
but I totally agree with that. Because, like, I have a journal too. And that was one thing that I did a while ago before I fell off the train. Mm-hmm. Right. And, like, I've never suffered from depression or anxiety or these things. So I can't speak on them per se as remedies or things that help. But I know for me, you know, and you, like, it helps reframe your mindset overall, like over a period of time, of course.
Yeah.
But it just helps elevate your feeling of like, you know, these are things that are wonderful in my life. That are things that I'm happy to, I'm glad to have. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and I think it was that void area where I wasn't doing, I wasn't filming. I just felt like I wasn't, you know, and then you finally want to take one step into film and then you realize like, man, look at this other guy who's doing this much better. And is this comparing from maybe being depressed, having that perspective of feeling like everyone's a giant. How am I going to catch up? How am I going to keep up? And ultimately the answer is you're just going to have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, am I better than this version of Daniel from last month?
Yeah.
Because if you just stay within your lane, it's like, but the thing is, people who are going through stuff and I was going through it, you can't just tell someone that. You know, you're just like, oh, dude, look in the mirror, do that, do that, do that, da, da, da. It's so weird. I think it's timing. It's people's experiences. It's going to be something that is the catalyst. And, you know, it's going to be a good time to segue, but that's what did it. Like, for me, the catalyst was work. Like, this certain, like, working for someone, which is fine. Like I've worked for people that are better and, you know, I enjoyed it, but I worked at a cannabis delivery service. And for 4 years, I was pretty much taken advantage of, and that was completely my fault. I should have I should have definitely spoke out for myself more, because I was the first employee. I was promised equity, didn't get it till the third or fourth year, but I pushed for it, but it was always met with, oh, you know, once we get a new office, once we get a new this, and getting to this place where I finally was on my fourth year and we built the company to 800K a year, which is ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
this
amazing.
Is a staff of, this is a staff of like 6 to 7, you know, and you know, you're getting fed peanuts. I mean, not completely peanuts, better than anybody around us, you know, we're competitive, but pricing, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's what keeps you in, but yeah, it's like, you know, they're feeding you peanuts, but the boss slathers it with peanut butter. So they make it look the appealing of the, it's the same thing. You know,
I love
so
that analogy. That's great.
No, dude, it's the same thing. So, you know, we're just getting fed it. And then you get constantly reminded. And she'd even say, like, sometimes the boss would be like, oh man, where could you get fine pay like this? You know? And I think she was psychologically priming us for us to be like, if we leave, we're not going to find anything better. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a toxic relationship where it, you know, abusive partners will be like the man or the woman, whoever's the abuser, will make them feel like you cannot function in this world without me. Mm. So they always feel like they're clung on to you. So I feel like she was definitely doing some psychological warfare to keep me in there. I remember some pretty crazy stuff. I won't go over everything, but
yeah, what was the final straw?
Yeah, ultimately it came to a head because came to a place where, you know, I finally got my equity, 0.02% of or what, $65,000 a month that ended up netting probably like $100 a month.
Right. And you built this company from the ground up with this person, right?
Yeah, day-to-day operations. I wasn't just an employee. I didn't do just deliveries. I did more than that.
So you got robbed. You got robbed.
I got robbed because I found, well, first of all, she gets a new employee. She's 3 months in. newbie. She sleeps on the couch, waits for a delivery. She calls out probably 50% of the time and is given the company car to take home because her car isn't working, which she would never do for us. She would just be like, here's an Uber home and then you can figure out the rest.
Right.
And we'd pay for the Uber. Like, I was seeing things that were changing and my boss was by, so I knew she probably got the hots for started every time that girl, let's call her Jay, the new girl, came in to work. She'd get a lunch. We never used to get lunches. I worked there since the day it started. Like, literally, right. We met on a Starbucks. She interviewed me, and she was working alone. Just, you know, all that stuff. So
that's insane. That's ridiculous.
And, you know, it's ridiculous. And I used to sleep in a Walmart parking lot until an order would come. Then I'd come to pull up at her garage, and she'd give me the order, and I'd go run.
Right.
Like, it was that, like, I started from the ground up. So I seen her the way she was and her whole personality. She would never do that. And she just started doing it then. Jolie, bleep that out. Joel's, she, I mean, I have more dirt on them than me. So.
Right. No, you're good. You're the right side.
I think I'm good.
Yeah.
I think a lawyer would be fine with what we got on the table, but
yeah.
Basically, I found out that she was getting the same equity as me. And I found that through a pay stub that she had accidentally left on my desk. I had been working there for 4 years, built it up to $800K a year. This girl, Jay, she had been calling out 50% of the time, getting the company car, getting free lunches, sleeping on the couch. She gets the same equity as me. I immediately confront my boss. She cries. She says, "Oh, I shouldn't. I'm grateful for you, Daniel. I'm grateful for you. I can't lose you. I don't know how I'd function this business and this and that, this and that. You're my rock and whatever." I think they're crocodile tears because she does something snaky. Literally, she's been doing it and she's keeping the machine running. And that is, she was telling me we're making $45K a month. Mm-hmm. That's why when I said $800K a year, I didn't know that at the time. Right. Until I saw this document on Excel, because I didn't trust her from that moment. I looked at Excel. I found our real income, $800K a year, $65K a month. So I was making, she was giving me the royalty off the lesser number, 45K and 65. I do the math because it's 0.02. She's doing all this to save like $50. I'm like, that's disgusting. Yeah. That's disgusting, because that just shows you're willing to penny pinch your guy who's actually built you to $800K, and you're trying to penny pinch $50 a month.
Right.
That is disgusting. So I confronted her.
Yeah, of course.
Literally 7 days later. But the thing is, I took a picture and I went home and I get an email from her, and I wasn't going to confront her till the end of the week. I just wanted to see if she did anything or I could find anything more. And it came to a head because that night she says, "Warning. Daniel, you have been caught doing digital theft." I click on it and it's her going over saying she caught me with the cameras, because we have cameras over there, seeing that I took a picture. And I'm like, "All right, I'll tell you what the picture's about, but you gotta meet me in the morning in the office."
Yeah.
So let me drink some water, but that's the lead up.
That's a story, all right. Like, and classic.
Yeah, and this plays all a role into the film, so I'm getting to that for sure. This is the catalyst I was talking about that propelled me to get back into the void of 4 years, the depression, the nothingness, the kind of working to make someone else a millionaire, the, you know, not doing what you're actually meant to be born to do in this life. Mm-hmm. That was happening. This came to a head because of what she had brought onto me. And I felt like I had no other choice but to leave with no other job lined up. And yeah, I called her out. I went in the morning. I pretty much showed her everything. 99% sure she's a narcissist, because she just gaslit me. She just said that I was crazy. This is the French Revolution. You're trying to guillotine me. You know, when has this been about just trying to get at me? And it was disgusting, honestly. Like, she showed no gratitude for me or anything. She just seemed like I should be grateful for eating peanuts and also not questioning anything. So I said, let's go. Let's go to the document. Bring it up. Let's find the numbers. And then she's just like, "We can go."
Yeah, like very timidly, like not
and
really.
Like very, very, yes, very weird how she did it. Like, she just wanted me to forget about it. And I'm like, all right, well, I know anybody that'd be telling the truth would be eager to show me that document. So you sitting here has already been proof enough to me. And I mean, I've had enough proof. And with the whole Jolie thing, with the whole Jay thing and everything, and then this, it's like, I've already dealt with this for so long that, man, everybody else in the staff agrees. So good luck with that after I leave. And I pretty much just gave her, I had some order money from when I took the last orders and just went home with it and was going to bring it back the next day. I just threw it on the ground. I was pretty angry. I was pretty upset. I remember myself looking pretty flustered, probably. And the thing is, she never once like gave me anything that said like I was sorry or anything till the very end. And I brought up something crazy. One of our coworkers, his other name, we'll call him G. He took an order like probably a month prior to all this, and got a gun pulled up to his head, like on a delivery, and got everything stolen out of his lap. He quit 2 days later. He was that shooken up. Like he was visibly shooken, like for the last, like, and my boss was like, I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to make sure it's right. I'm going to make sure I give him severance pay. I'm going to do this. And she gets this. And I looked at the Excel doc because I can see the pay of everybody. Yeah. That's always been a thing. I never, maybe not the sales numbers. I had to do digging on that Excel, but our weekly pay, whatever. I could see that. And I see that she gave him when he left. I was thinking like he was going to get a couple thousand. Like I just know how much she bought an Audi R8 and she would park it 5 blocks down and walk to the office so she doesn't look like she's of money.
That's so sneaky.
I knew, but I saw her when she would do that. So I knew she had money. So I thought, okay, couple G's. Right. The guy got almost died. Like you don't know how crazy people are. Yeah. And he was crying. He was like messed up. He's older than me crying. I was like, you know, the guy had PTSD. She gave him $100
for severance pay. Are you serious?
And he was the second employee. So he was my number two. He was my number two. He was been there for 4 years as well.
Thank the Lord you got out of there. Right.
And I told her, I'm like, are you going to do me like how you did Johnny? Am I going to leave here making you a millionaire and I get nothing? And I'm like, I don't even want it anymore, you know?
Right.
Secretly, of course, anybody does. You're already getting gypped. You're leaving without a job lined up because you're seeing some corrupt crap. But it was a bluff, you know, maybe a sly bluff. And I, at the time, I kind of felt like that, honestly. But I knew it would do me good for film. So that's what I did, you know? So I left. I was walking. She's like, okay. She finally broke down. A narcissist never really breaks down or ever admits defeat. She was like, she's like crying now. She's like, I can't explain that one. And I'm like, you can't explain it. I can. You're greedy. And then I just started walking out.
and then you do your own thing.
Like, and then she's like, I'll give you 3 months pay and 3 months royalty pay. You know, I know nothing can be fixed. You're never going to look at me the same, but I will give you that. And I'm like, okay, I'm gone. She's like, I'll have it under the mat in the office in the front door. Just come tomorrow morning and take it. And she's like holding my hand, like really like over my hand, just trying to hold me and get close to me and stuff. And I was like,
no, get away
from me. Like she probably did feel emotions of missing me and like how we were together for 4 years, but that's her narcissist brain not realizing how much she's actually done damage. What she's actually doing. You know, I've kind of known she was a narcissist from year one, but it never really, she never aimed at me.
Yeah, never dawned on me.
It got to, she's been aiming at me, but.
Just, was that 3 months of pay, like enough? Was that like a cushion?
Dude,
like,
no, so this gets better. I get to the mat in the morning, I grab it, get to my car, because I don't want to, you know, open it for the public. It's going to be all cash. I get to the car, I look at it, and it's a month and a half of pay, a month and a half of royalties. And I'm like, wait, our whole argument for an hour with this narcissist in front of me was she is a person that tells the truth.
Right.
So,
and even
so, you literally just proved me right at the very end. Yeah. That's how much she was a narcissist. I was like, this is some, I'm so glad I'm out here regardless. It was meant to be, but I will use this money for every bit of film gear and launch my video production company, which was Take 10 Video. And I started back again in film, taking the dust off. I literally had a dust on my Canon 70D. And I
That's what I had.
yeah, that's what I started with. So I just dusted it off and I was like, got to get back to work. But yeah, man, it took that.
I was going to say, that's a lot of trials and tribulations for a long time.
I would have never gotten out there because the money, the royalties, it's like you're getting money without working. It's like it satiates you. It kind of like, yeah, it kind of numbs you. It tranquilizes you to be content and okay. And then, yeah, then you get depressed that, you know, nothing's moving forward in your own life, but you know, your bank account's going up. So it's like, okay, whatever, but your soul isn't getting filled.
Yeah. Cause you're building something for someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it literally all happened at the timing that it was probably meant to happen. And it was just good timing, I'll tell you that. But yeah, it's what started it all for me. Yeah, and it was a rough couple months, I'll tell you that.
I know you got to go pretty soon because you have a call, but for someone that's like going through that maybe similar situation where they feel like they're stuck where they are, and maybe like the pay is keeping them going, but the work isn't, what would your advice to them be? Someone that's going through something that you went through.
Well, first of all, you know, it depends really where you're at. Cause
yeah,
you know, if you have $0 and you need to pay a bill, like you're going to have to work a side job for sure. But if you can, if you were like me that had some couple thousands, obviously mine came from that, but the severance, the half severance, but yeah, I already had an emergency fund in place. I was planning on leaving. I already had seen the lunches, the free this, the free that. I wanted to leave off just of that alone. It was just enough to make me, today I'm quitting, until that stuff happened. But you gotta, if you're somebody right now that is working part-time, hates it, and it feels like your soul's being sucked and ripped from you, I was there. What you gotta do is you gotta build a spaceship. You gotta build a rocket ship secretly while you're working. You're doing your work. There's some dead time. You're building up something. And every day you put a new piece, a new part, a new this, you put a new wire connected, and then you're just going to be able to one day blast off. For me, that was the emergency fund. I created probably like a $2,000 to $3,000 emergency fund to live off of for who knows? Like, I don't know when my next check's coming, right? But I just built it up to a point where I can be like, I can go full all in. Even if I can, for 2 to 3 months, I know I can be sprinting for 2 to 3 months instead of with another job. Yeah. So I did that, and it, combining it with the 4K, I put to gear, the 2 to 3K was to live off of. Obviously I have money outside of that, but you don't want to delve into your real bank accounts for your life, your future, right? You want, that's for emergency funds is for. So I had that, and I really had this kind of do or die thinking, like I cannot hit zero on that emergency fund. I will not allow it. I need to work. I need to book clients. I need to figure out how this whole game works until that ever happens.
Yeah.
And I'm finally getting to a place where thinking like that was good in the beginning, but it's like, you know, now it's like, you got to be like, oh, I want to hit this much monthly, this much bigger goals. But, you know, that was the original goal, was just do not die. Just go full time until literally this ship is floating and it's sailing and you're hitting waves.
Right. Like you're kind of at rock bottom in a sense. So you kind of, you just have to go up.
Dude, yes.
And so last question. You go.
I mean, I could add a little bit if you have time.
Oh yeah. I have time. I mean,
oh, sweet. I can go up until 3:15.
15?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's perfect. So like 20 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. That way you don't have to feel rushed or whatever. I got some time because I thought the guy was we're gonna end up doing a call instead of a meetup. So
okay, that's good. So you have time to just like not have to travel or commute. But
yeah,
I was gonna ask, so when you're in that spot of like not desperation, but you just had to get work because you had to survive, how would you go from there to finding your first couple of clients? Like, what was that like?
I mean, it's everybody's story, working for free. And just being grateful that you have somebody that is allowing you to work with them so you can post, you can have it on your portfolio. It's being grateful, one thing. You get an ego with it, it's going to feel rough. It's going to feel rough because you're going to think, oh, I'm worth more than this. But at the time I was like, dude, no pressure. Like, or even if it's small project for $100, it's like, I don't feel like these people want the world from me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can learn within this little ecosystem and find my footing.
I love that.
So that was super important.
Yeah, the super method important. I used to, like, free to fee. You know, when you're first in a new area, you do for free because, one, you need to gain experience and you need to have, like, some example in your portfolio. But then also there's no risk to the client at that point. You know, you're not, the pressure is a lot less because they're not spending hundreds or thousands of dollars on your work. Because once they start doing like, then you really, really have to perform to the best of your ability. And I think, you know, when, even when you're doing free work, you should try to do your best work so that you can show that work to other people and say, hey, this is what I do. And this is why it's worth, you know, $3,000, $2,000, for example.
Yeah.
So you just did that a couple of times, right? With people. And then did they become recurring?
Yeah. It was weddings in the beginning for sure. I mean, I would do some kind of like product videos and random stuff for free or free to fee. But I was like, weddings was pain. Like, people need to get married. I mean, it was a little bit before the pandemic, I think I started this, which sucks. Is right when I, I started this whole company in the pandemic. So I started literally rock bottom of rock bottom.
Wow.
That's amazing. Did book some weddings with some people using masks and whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like the first wedding I did for free. And then all of a sudden they gave me like a $300 tip. I was like, boom, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it came out really well to where, somebody I had done a free to fee for a photographer saying, hey, I'll do you a company profile video, what you do, who you serve, all that stuff. And it's like an IG reel, or it's like a 4x5. Mm-hmm. And then she was down, and we did a great video together. It was my first talking head interview type with B-roll attached, and it just worked really well. And she hit me up with her sister to say, you know, she's getting married. And I quoted them $1,200, and I got the $1,200 on my second wedding.
Yeah,
from $0 to $1,200, and they tipped me $300, obviously, in the first one. But it's really because the expectation was zero, and then to $1,200 was just like, wow, you know, it's like, and
like people saw value in your work.
Yeah, and I literally after that I switched to commercial because I was like, it's good money, a little too much for me, just too many moving parts. You know, I had. Just a lot of some people have a passion for it. It's good though. You have to test out different things.
Yeah,
I agree. That's what I call the buffet method, and that's pretty much if you try chicken wings all your life at the buffet and you think they're pretty good, but that's all you try, you're just gonna think that those are the best, right? Yeah. And then you don't know that maybe you have a taste for steak. That's actually better for you. And if you tasted it, you would realize now chicken's number two. Mm-hmm. And that's what it comes to film is that weddings, I thought I was just eating on chicken drums the whole time. And then I had a little bit of commercial work, which was steak. And then I'm like, now I can get down to the fine dining. Now you can get down to what you really like, what your real tastes are, when you really smile at a plate when it comes to you. That's where, if you're smiling and the plate's at you, looking at you right in your face, that's probably what you're meant to do. But don't be afraid of trying everything. Don't be afraid of eating a little bit of, you know, soup and lentils and doing all that. But
especially at the beginning, you know, when you're still figuring it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you're not going to know that you want to do weddings for the rest of your life or for 10, 5 years, 20 years, unless you've like done other stuff and be like, oh, I don't like, you know, commercial work, or I don't really like working on boats or something. Like something really niche, you know. So I love it. And once again, the risk is low because you're not asking people for, you know, $12,000 for a wedding, you know, or $9,000.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them here.
So, and I don't even market my weddings anymore, but people still secretly hit me up and I'm like, I'm going to charge them I know it's only my third wedding video, but I'm going to charge $1,800 just because I don't want to do them. So it's hopefully it's like, I'm going to get a lot of rejections, but if they say yes, it's like, well, it's worth it to come out now. So if you're ever in that place, you can do that as well. I got one for $1,800 in the third. It's not till November, but it's like, I don't even market for this. And I've only done a couple of videos, and then it's being okay with rejection, because if you just want to guess every time, you're going to say $200, $300, $400. But then you burn out. Unless you really feel like you need to have the experience, go for it. But for me, I already had done film in high school. The muscle memory kind of kicked in quick to where, you know, because I'm working with a filmmaker now who's like 3 years in the game, and he's seen my work. He's like, it looks like you've been 3 years in the game.
Yeah, no, I love your work. It's super clean. Like, great.
Thank you, dude. I really appreciate that. Coming from a filmmaker, it means a lot.
I was going to compliment your work again.
Thanks, you. So, you know, it was nice to hear him say that to me as well. It's like he came from, like, he didn't even have, like, started a new film in high school, nothing. So it took him 1 to 3 years to get to a quality of work. where he's a little, I think he has a little bit more finesse. He's been in the game a little longer, but, you know, someone I aspire to for sure. And you should have that, you know, find people in your community that are smarter than you, better than you.
Yeah.
It'll humble you. It'll make you be like, it'll make it feel like an anime to where you're just powering up so you can master that person's energy level to shoot out Kamehameha. And it's going to feel great. It's like, it's a good, it shouldn't be competition. It should be community, you know?
Yeah. I love the community aspect. Cause when I first started this podcast in Des Moines, like I asked a couple local people to come to university. I was borrowing my university's podcast equipment. So mm-hmm. they would come in and we'd talk, and then, you know, we're doing the same thing. We're not competing anymore. There's so much work, even in Des Moines of all places, that like oftentimes I'm unavailable. So I ask them to cover, or they ask me to cover something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's when you're feeling those feelings of loneliness sometimes, because like I have a girlfriend and I love spending time with her and it's great. She's a wonderful mm-hmm. partner. But even then, so sometimes you need someone that you can resonate with in the same work environment. Like these things.
Yeah, for sure.
You're kind of on your own for a long time.
Yeah, you feel like Batman with film as a filmmaker exactly. sometimes. I feel like I'm like I can't relate to someone. I can't even like talk about certain like things that I, you know, sometimes just talking to someone for a little bit about a problem you're having, you realize mm-hmm. they've solved it 1,000 times. And then right. they're like, oh dude, just do this. And then you're like, it's like your brain breaks.
Yeah, exactly. Because
it's like, what? I looked all over YouTube. But they say in just a way that just connects mm-hmm. to you, that solves it instantly. So yeah, dude, I totally agree with you on that.
Because you, one thing I didn't realize is like, I've always been someone that I thought I could just do things on my own, you know, and just work and like mm-hmm. be all right if I just take the reins. But you know, if you don't have a community, it becomes very hard to keep going sometimes.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then sometimes when there's a slow season or a slow this, being a second shooter helps out a lot.
Yeah.
Being someone that's like, dude, I need somebody on this set is so, you know, and I started that just being like, hey, dude, I would hit up people and I wouldn't even be like, hey, I can help you do B-roll. I can help you on set. I can help do lighting. I literally would tell them, hey, dude, love your work. You're a great filmmaker. I was wondering if I could just like help you move garbage after at the end of the set or grab you or do coffee runs for you. Just to be a fly on the wall and learn from you.
Yeah, and that goes with the
that would be my best response. Yeah. And that would be, and I would get people to want to be literally on, like, dude, come on. And then they pay me anyways. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even ask.
Yeah.
And it's literally coming from a place like, oh dude, because they can be like, let me get on. They're thinking like, oh, this guy just wants to take my camera, learn off me, like this and that. If you just be like, hey man, I'll help you with whatever you really need help with. If it's not film stuff, but you need help with something else, like moving stuff, I'll do that. So it's literally being just humble enough to be like, you know, you're not nothing right now, but there's a lot of great people out there in the world. Give them something they really could value, really, really need. And they'll help pull you up, you know?
Yeah.
And I really believe that. Maybe not everybody, but majority of people. So
yeah, like go help me out. Giving, you know? And I think, one thing I've been looking at a lot is people giving advice on like how to grow on social platforms like LinkedIn or Instagram. A lot of people are saying, you know, liking and commenting, but being genuine about it, like actually supporting people, complimenting people. And even though that might be like, oh, I'm trying to grow my own thing, if the end justify the means or whatever, you know, you're still giving to the community positive vibes, you know? And I think that's just, like, you gotta be like that. You gotta give in order to
receive. You gotta give.
That's the most cliche thing
and
ever.
Give
right?
without expectation. And that sometimes is really hard, right? Because whenever we give, we expect something in return. But you really have to, in my mind, whenever I'd give without expectation, even if there was an expectation, my expectation would be so low as to just think of it as, well, this is a great experience.
Right.
And at a certain point, you're going to be higher value. You're going to need a charge. You can't just think like that all the time when it comes to stuff, right? You need to eat, right?
So yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, it's when you're in a new genre, right? You're trying to get into a new genre of film. You're trying to go somewhere where you've never gone before. You're going to have to think like that, you know, give without expectation. Until
that
you're
makes
a place
you happier.
Where you, it does. No, it's for sure a mental thing.
For sure. I totally agree with you. And of course, like when you're beginning, that's a great spot. And then when you're like, when you have too much work, you have to adjust, you know, but I mean, that comes and goes with experience. Like you give as much as you can and then you'll get, And then when you get too much, you know, you like you double your prices or something to make sure you have enough time for yourself. But even then, so like you don't like I recently, like you said, I had to double my prices because I just didn't have enough time for school or work or like my personal life, you know. And there's only one of me filming and editing these things.
Yeah. Oh, so, same here.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I'm not doubling or just increasing my prices because I want to have more money. It's because I want to take care of myself so I can do better work and like,
yeah. Just and do, then the yeah, be better, few yeah. projects you, yeah, the few projects you do are now like, you're gonna put more thought into it, and you're not gonna. You feel like you're giving you so much money to where it's like, you're happy to work on it, you know? Because to put your all into something that's like $100 when you're so busy. Right. It makes you feel like it's the last thing on your mind.
Yeah.
So at the same time, you need to make it worth it for you when it comes to finally realizing your worth and your value and what you can do, you know.
And one thing that's really important and worth too is hearkening back to what you said about financials, which is something that I think is overlooked a little bit. Like one main thing that I recently did was just go through my monthly expenses in terms of business expenses, like what
I Premiere Pro. Recently.
Yeah, like your overhead. And so I know, like, if I'm not making $400 a month, that I'm losing $400. Like, if I'm making $0 a month, I'm losing $400. So that also helps, you know.
Gauge. Yeah, you make you feel like I'll never want to hit or get under that, you know. Right. So it makes you always have a little fire, but of course you throw bigger fires from your wants of, you know, working with this or doing this type of project, having a retainer. So that will, you know, X amount, whatever. Yeah. Because, you know, that kind of goes into something, I don't know if I covered it already, but, you know, it's like I only have a little bit of time here, but
yeah,
I could definitely get into this is, it's from when I was at rock bottom, you have to have a very survival mentality, you know, just whatever it can do to get by. But at some point, you need to have a mentality that is transitioned with, I need to be able to basically secure like my life, like basically make this my living, make this my bread and butter, make this so that no matter what, I never have to go back to a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
And that requires you just being more less than survival, more thrival, you know?
And so I think that comes when we have working with people to just, because you kind of dictate the environment that you work in most of the time, you know, unless you're working with someone that's like incredibly unpleasant, but then you can always just leave. So you set the environment up. You can make it pleasant to work with you. You can make it fun to work with you. And, you know, it's you have the control. And if you do that over and over again, then you make your life easier and, you know, it feels more fun to thrive in it rather than like, oh, I'm just here to collect a paycheck, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's never really about the money for me. I've rejected good paying projects just because I literally didn't align with it. Yeah, and, you know, it film's hard because it's so big and vast that you can't just like give out advice. You know, I hope whoever's listening actually just kind of takes little bits at least, but it's never gonna one shoe fits all. But the mentalities, I believe, is universal. You having a good mentality, gratitude, you being humble enough to when you're in a new territory to respect that you're new, and you know, to navigate the world like within that. And then, but also when you get to a place where you're actually worth more, you have to recognize your value and be able to ask.
Right.
And it's weird. That's very like, it almost seems like they're a paradox, but you have to know, it's based situational for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know those things. You have to be adequate with how to differentiate. So super important.
I'm still learning
now.
Yeah.
I'm still learning now. You know, I'm getting to this place where I'm actually trying to delve into digital marketing agency. I'm trying to transition fully, but I'm getting to a place where I want to still be a videographer, basically make the ads for my campaign funnels.
Yeah.
So that's my new thing. I feel like that's necessary because I'm getting to a place where, and it's maybe a me problem, but I feel like, you know, one-off projects, you can retain or some things, but the retainer is only as good as if they have a marketing director.
Yeah.
And then they just need your video content, your fuel. You know, they need to put gas in the engine. But if they don't have that, it's hard to pitch a retainer when you're just doing video content.
Yeah, so they don't have a plan.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to, and when I say trying, it means I'm literally researching and learning this deep diving. And just, I'm probably going to run within the month or two my own campaign funnel to try to lead generate my own clients
Right.
as my own case study. So when I have to go into a meeting and say, well, how can I know I can trust you? I'd be
Like,
like,
I
well,
did it.
I gave myself 10 clients this month. I gave myself 5 clients this month off of 50, 100 bucks, off
Right.
of 200 bucks. And I converted that to X amount of sales. So I'm in that transition right now.
I love that for you. That's great.
But that's what I said. And I think in the beginning, I'm boots in the trenches. I'm not going to talk like I'm here. And I'm here live. Like, you know, my book's being written. I believe your book's being written. Who knows what the next chapters hold. But I believe like there's a slice for everybody out here. And you can't fail unless you failed yourself first. Unless you let your mind take over and convince you that you're not good enough, that you can't film, that you don't have a place in the market, you will get yourself to quit. I think the only way I could quit is either if I die or is it because my mind wins. And the first one I can't guarantee, but the second one I can. I will not let my mind win over me. So anytime I think of that I'm inadequate or whatever, I'm just like, dude, realize where I was a year ago. Sometimes I go back to my Instagram, my first post, and I'm like, I didn't even know how to export.
Right. And
like,
now
this
look
is
where
all
you are
like
now.
Pixelated and like, yeah. And that was a year and a half ago.
Right.
And I didn't even know how to export. It's blown out right here. The framing was off. And then it just it makes you be like, wow, so this isn't rock bottom.
Yeah.
It's just a dip in them. It's like having a crypto market. It's like going up and down, up and down. And
yeah, it's
down. Yeah, let's not talk about crypto too much. But it has a down, but then you're down from here. It looks like a down if you look at it from the month's view. But if you go 5 years, you're up.
Going up.
So it's like the same thing. So as long as you recognize that, you'll be all right.
I think that's a beautiful point to make. And before we end this, where can people find you? Like where social media.
I'm currently building out a new website, so be on the lookout for that. But pretty much Instagram at take 10 video. That's TAKE 10 video. Pretty much take 10 video. And that's pretty much all. Like I get inquiries through there, I get referrals, and that's pretty much been my bread and butter. But I know there's so much more. I know I can make this automated campaign funnel. It's automated. And then there's also the website I need to do, which is going to have blogs for keywords. You know, there's a lot I can help on. So luckily as a filmmaker, as you know, there's always stuff to do. Like you can, if you're not editing, you should be prospecting. If you're not prospecting, you should build out a system for prospecting.
Yes.
Number one, sales. So it's like, it took a while to realize that sales, like, I think somebody said 80%, if you're not, don't have a lot of clients and nothing to do, 80% of your time should be prospecting for new clients, and then 20% should be editing or learning. Like 80% execution to 20% bookworming it.
So then you're not gonna have anything to do if you don't have any clients, technically.
Yeah, if you don't have any clients, technically you're just stuffing your head with information, and then it's just filling up like a giant like balloon, and nothing's happening. Like you're not actually using it. You're not using that. So that's where I was probably first 5 months into it. I was in that. I think everyone gets there, but if you see that now in yourself, you should be executing boots on the ground, doing stuff 80% of the time. 20% should be YouTube videos, learning, because if it's 80% YouTube to 20% executing, that's going to be super slow.
Yeah. Or you learn as you go. That's what I did a lot. You know, I would do a project and then be like, how do I do this title? And then I just look it up. I still do that.
Yeah. It's like two birds with one stone. So. Mm-hmm.
But this has been a wonderful conversation, Daniel. I really like the way, just the shape of the conversation. I don't know if that.
I tried to fit it in. I know it's, I tried to fit it in. So, I mean, yeah. So anybody in a bad work environment, the main thesis is just, if you're in a bad work environment, build your rocket ship, blast out. And if you have anything that feels like you're going to fail or you're going to do this, it's 99.9% coming from your own mind. So make sure to look out for your own self, meditate, do a cold shower, whatever you need, whatever gets your brain balanced specifically for you, take the little extra time to do it, because we shower our bodies every day. We never shower our mind. We should take as much energy into our bodies, like the gym and stuff. it's yeah. same thing. Our brain's a muscle. It's like we should be putting time into helping that as well. So if your mind's right, I believe everybody's got the best engine possible when your mind's right. And we're all like, we're all pretty much Lamborghinis if our minds are all sharp and ripened. So it's like, let's hit the day with a Lambo instead of a Buick. And sorry if anybody has a Buick.
Or if they're not a car person, they don't know what you're talking. They're just like, I only know that mine has four wheels.
Yeah.
But, I love that analogy as a person that knows what a Buick and Lamborghini are. But
yeah, that's, for sure.
That's great. Anyway, it's been fantastic. And thank you everyone for listening. If you made it this far, the six of you or whoever many is listening, I appreciate it. And do you have any last words before I stop recording?
No, just catch me at Take 10 Video. If you ever need a second shooter, hit me up. If any of you guys have some good skills, hit me up. I'm trying to build out a team soon with some retainer clients that hopefully come through when I transition to this digital agency. So, yeah, hopefully we connect. The most important thing is that'd be cool if the viewers connected. If y'all are fellow filmmakers. And yeah, we'll hopefully me and you can get on a set sometime.
Yeah, I love that. All right, thank you so much, Daniel. And have a good night or good morning, whatever time you're watching this.